It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 360. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. The up-and-down basketball season continued, with devastating losses against San Francisco and Gonzaga. What is wrong with the program, and what could be done to fix it? Matt and I discuss. We also talk spring football and define exactly, once and for all, what soup is. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. You can get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. You can join the conversation with us on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout and listen to us right now. Okay, we are not the arbiters of deciding how food is defined.
But we've become that.
Apparently.
The people are looking to us for answers, Adam.
Okay, so here's the thing.
Give the people what they want.
Melted ice cream is not soup.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to have to agree with you there. It's not.
So the definition of soup, according to dictionary.com, which is the definitive place to get all definitions.
Pretty much. Internet.
A liquid food made by boiling or simmering meat, fish, or vegetables with various added ingredients. No meat, no fish, no vegetables, no simmering, no
soup. That is some gross ice cream. Have you ever had bacon in a milkshake, though? Bacon in a milkshake. It still doesn't beat the definition, but it's an interesting little adventure.
It is an interesting adventure, but it's still not a soup.
And I wouldn't do it a second time.
I also would not do it. I had a Big Mac with bacon on it.
Yeah, I saw a commercial for that. That's a real thing, huh?
That's a real thing, and it doesn't work. The special sauce and bacon aren't a great combo.
No, stop it. Dude, stop that. Stop that. Bacon is a good combo with anything. My wife and I, this will give you an idea about the types of restaurants my wife and I go to eat at. But we went out to eat. We rarely even get to do this. We went out to dinner, I don't know, was this last weekend? And we were ordering something. Oh, with the guacamole. He said, yeah, you can. There was an option to add bacon chips. And I said to the waiter, so is this like you're going to like cook up bacon that I can dip in the guacamole? He says, no, I think that just means they're going to put some guacamole, like some bacon over the top of your guacamole. He was wrong. Like they fried out bacon and they brought it out for you to dip in the guacamole. It was a little weird.
You know what's good to dip in guacamole?
Anything.
Anything. But we had at this restaurant in Minneapolis, they had jicama and carrots.
And I would not have thought carrots. I've done both of those things in guacamole.
Oh. It was really good. All right, so Justin Sweeney has our first tweet bag.
Sweeney! Tweet bag!
He's going to make many appearances today. That's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter.
Full force. He's coming in hot!
Well, unless we just don't answer his questions again, which we have done a little bit lately. He says, the culinary debate rolls on. Are crustless sandwiches a ravioli? Okay, let's stop. A sandwich is two or more slices of bread with a layer of meat, fish, cheese, etc. between each pair.
Is this, again, dictionary.com? Correct. Is that what we've decided?
Ravioli has to be pasta, guys. It has to be pasta. It's not a ravioli because it looks like one, okay? Like, ravioli is pasta, and pasta is wheat and eggs. It's not bread. It's a different thing. So, guys, stop. This has to stop.
I would say a crustless sandwich
is a sandwich.
Is more... It's closer to a kolache than it is a ravioli.
Oh, for sure. For sure. It's not a ravioli at all, right? It's not a ravioli at all. Okay, so let's just stop. And we're done. We're done with the food. I've said that multiple times over the last 10 months, and we always end up coming back to the food. But we'll see. Our brother Don at DP Mangum on Twitter says, when will you do your baseball preview? It is a fan favorite.
I think it is a fan favorite.
Mr. Sweeney would maybe disagree with that. I think next week.
Sweeney basically told us every time we do the baseball preview, he falls asleep on the toilet listening to it. So I don't know. I don't know. Like, is that more information about Sweeney than I wanted?
It's definitely that. I don't want to know he listens to the podcast while on the toilet. That's too much.
Pretty efficient use of time, though.
Yeah, give him some props for that. How about next week, Matt? Should we do it next week?
Next week it is. Right, will Harper week. Have signed by next week? That's killing me.
Who cares?
I'll tell you who cares. A bunch of baseball fans care.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, Manny Machado signing with San Diego.
Take it or leave it. Who cares?
That's not going to end well, is it? Hey, no. We're using 50% of our salary on one guy. And what happens when he doesn't run out a slow grounder, which will happen the first time he hits a slow grounder?
Oh, jeez.
Just saying. The
guy's... Man, why do you got to pile on Manny like this? Hey, I mean,
if,
come on.
If I'm going to give somebody $300 million, I they need to be like a real $300 million guy. That's just me. Dave Broderick says, do you like websites? First hashtag first time facebagger, hashtag climb on in. Welcome to the Facebook, the tweet bag.
Yeah, that's good for you. Do you like websites? I don't understand.
My favorite website is dictionary.com.
I don't even understand this question.
I don't either. I don't know. He just put it in here.
So, do you like websites?
It's a first time facebagger. What is, are you making what is fun the of a first time facebagger's question?
What is a website?
The listeners are always right, Matt. They're always
website. Right. That's how you say website in Russian, I think.
Wow, thank you for that. That's very enlightening.
I also know how to say computer in Korean. I just said it.
Oh, wow. All right. Oh, man. If you don't say anything else like that the rest of the show, it'll be great. All right, man. Let's do the CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Men's volleyball got their third win in a row versus Grand Canyon. I watched that match. They're now ranked number 9. They had a controversial call go their way in the winning set. So that could have turned things around, but such things happen. And then they have a strange part of their schedule. They've got Stanford in Provo this week, number 8 Stanford, and then they visit Stanford next week. So big week, big 2 weeks for them. If they can split with Stanford, I think I'll feel a lot better about their chances in the postseason because Stanford's the kind of team they're going to run into in the postseason. So
it's kind of gut check time here. This is the stretch.
Yeah, this is the stretch right here. So good luck to them in these next two weeks. In the Salt Lake Tribune, Jay Drew, friend of the podcast, Jay Drew, had a
Just call him? No, okay, never mind.
What did I call him? Jay Drew?
I don't know. I thought it's called him Drew J or something.
The men's volleyball program is obviously a team that has relied on overseas players throughout the years. And the player this time is from Italy, Davide Gardini. And he has been that latest international find and has been quite a success story so far this year. Matt, why isn't basketball doing this?
Recruiting Italians?
Not specifically Italians, but more international folks.
Gonzaga, I don't know. That's a good question. Because remember a couple years ago, they sent Lee Kamard over somewhere to watch European basketball. And we even talked about it on the show. There's that Chinese player that
academically can ever get in. But I feel like this is something that Dave Rose and team need to really dig into because this is a problem right now with depth, and you could solve that by going out of the box on recruiting, right? But anyway, great success story for the volleyball team. Women's basketball, Matt, took care of San Diego this week. They've got San Francisco and Santa Clara to finish out the WCC schedule, so good luck to them. And, they got a chance still at the NCAA, so we'll wish them luck as they make their charge there. For thinking about the NFL, one of our best defensive players of the last few years was Sione Takitaki, and he's been invited to, not a surprise, to the NFL scouting combine.
Yeah, this is it. The Takitaki story is a great one.
Yeah. Yeah, he has had some struggles, he's done a great job, and he is, I think, we're going to have another linebacker playing with Warner and Mr. Kyle Van Noy in the pros on a regular basis. I believe he will just be I believe he will be a starter in the NFL. That is my belief.
Well, and I think as we watch the success of Taki Taki and the success of Kyle Van Noy, I think it's an opportunity for us as BYU fans to take a look at the stories of these two young men and think about the fact that for both of these guys, there were times when we thought that their time at BYU was over because of poor decision-making off the field. And, coaching staff decided in both of these cases to give these guys a second chance. And it really – and it worked out really well, right? I mean, who knows what happens to Kyle Van Noy if he ends up somewhere else? Who knows if what happens to Taki Taki if he decides not to, stick it out and come back? So, there is some balance to be struck, right? When we look at some – when people make mistakes or when things aren't going well or if a player, has some other type of down period in their career, right? These are the types of things you got to keep in mind when you're thinking about the fact that sometimes people merit getting a second chance.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
both sure. On the football field and off the field, these guys have done some great things.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, Matt, let's talk about basketball. Do you even want to talk about basketball?
I guess. Basketball is like, it's exciting to talk about and then it's not, and then it is, and then it's not.
So, the San Francisco game was one of the worst endings ever, right?
I mean, so,
BYU had that victory, and similar to their victory, I guess was at LMU the week before, where they snatched victory out of the jaws of defeat. This time they snatched defeat out of the jaws of victory, and they could not close it. Turnovers, poor shot selection at the end. Maybe some questionable calls by the officials, but I'm not going to put it on the officials this time. I think we just BYU played poorly down the stretch against San Francisco, and give San Francisco credit. They also made some really good plays in order to win that game. And then, of course, Gonzaga absolutely destroys, worse loss in the Dave Rose era. Matt, worse loss, San Francisco or Gonzaga? Which one is worse?
The San Francisco loss is worse. I mean, what a time. Let me just throw this out here, though, because what a time it is to be alive. I was on a plane and watched the first half of the BYU basketball game on a television in the back of the seat in front of me, right? Just think about that for a minute.
Yeah.
And then we landed at halftime. I got my bag because every once in a while I still check a bag in 2019. And so I get my bag, get to my car, and I turn the game on. Now I can listen to the game on a radio when I'm driving home, and it's like a totally different game. But the fact that between being in some traveling and all this, you get to watch a BYU. You have that kind of access to BYU sports is amazing. But at the same time, it was terrible because who wanted to live through that? Anyway, getting to your question though, I think for me the San Francisco loss was worse. For a couple of reasons. One, I had a higher hope going into that game that BYU was going to be able to pull out a win. And for the first half, they definitely looked like they were going to. And what I feel like the wheels came off in the second half. Yeah, there were some questionable calls, but San Francisco took advantage of their opportunities and did exactly what they needed to do to win that game, especially down the stretch of the last few minutes.
Yes.
And we could not get back into it. We just couldn't get back into it.
Yeah.
And that, it was a more painful loss to watch, and it was less expected. So I'm going to go ahead and say that one's worse.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's worse for all of the reasons that you just mentioned. I think San Francisco went out and laid an egg in their next game, right?
Yep.
They have this big win against BYU on the road, and then they lose to Santa Clara.
I mean, I didn't even realize the Santa Clara still had a team.
Yeah, it's.
I'm just kidding. That was over.
I mean,
time.
which makes BYU potentially still the second seed, right? Which
we don't deserve based on the performance in the San Francisco game.
Well, I mean, but sure, I guess. I don't know what that means. I mean, you deserve it if you're the second place team. You don't if you don't. I don't know what that means, but sure. I mean, we could have earned it. You know, we owned our own destiny, as they say, right? And then flitted that away, if that's even the word. But then the Gonzaga game, though, I get what you're saying about expectations. My one thing with the Gonzaga game is this. That was one of the worst losses I've ever watched in my life. It's one of the worst games as far as a team I've rooted for, how they played, ever. That second half was a disaster on every level, right? In the second, first half, they looked okay, right? They hung in against one of the best teams in the country, and in the second half, they looked so bad, right? They just looked absolutely terrible, and everybody looked terrible, right? Everybody on the floor for the BYU looked terrible in the second half, except for maybe Baxter. Everybody else looked pretty bad. And the other piece is it showed once again we're a two-man team offensively, right? It's Childs and it's Hawes, and nobody else can seem to consistently and efficiently score the basketball. And then obviously defensively against a really good offensive team, we looked really, really bad. BYU did.
A little silly.
So I agree with you. Both of them are terrible. You should not lose any games by 34 points. Right?
I feel like there were scenarios where we could have lost both of those games, and I still wouldn't feel the way I feel now. Right? Way we lost the USF game and just the beatdown against Gonzaga, right? I mean, terrible. It didn't have to be this painful.
No, it didn't have to be that painful. And let's go to back to the tweet bag. Gary Payne at Fast Break GP says, just when I was feeling good about basketball, ugh. San Francisco was a gut punch. When does the NIT bracket come out? Hashtag tweet bag, hashtag pain bag. Bad news, Gary. As of today, I don't know if we make the NIT after those two losses. Most of the projections have us as the first four out. Now, remember, the NIT is not completely merit-based, right? They'll give teams, and we might be one of those teams, consideration on what they think financially might be best. So I think we probably still make the NIT, but it's certainly – we're not a slam dunk by any stretch of the imagination. I think we were in if we beat San Francisco. I think at that point you're in to the NIT. So we may be sitting on the outside of the NIT. On the good news category, Matt, there's a couple players that are looking better. We talked about Baxter last week, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, and his emergence. And he held his own against some of the Gonzaga big men. He looked passable, and I'm very excited about Baxter's future. I think he's going to be hopefully the next time BYU is legitimately good. Baxter will be a force on that next good team. Agree? Yep. Disagree?
I agree, and I think he very well could be.
Okay. Then the other good story is Zach Selyus. He has really played over the past few weeks. Both sides of the court has been very good. He's shooting 43% from three-point land, which is way improved over his terrible sub-30% last year. You know, he went from sharpshooter to I'm not sure I want him taking any three-point shots, right, towards the end of last year. And now he's playing well on both sides of the ball. Again, I mean, he's a junior, so I don't know that he'll be on the next good BYU team. But I feel like his reemergence is a nice – I don't know if it's going to make anybody feel better at this point. But it is good because he looked – pretty helpless last year to the point where it kind of was like, is this guy even going to have a role if he can't hit three-pointers at a good clip?
Yeah, but he seems to be settling into the role he's in now, which I think is a little bit of less pressure than what people were expecting out of him last year.
Right.
And that's a two-headed monster, right? I mean, people are expecting a little less of him now because the performance last year wasn't very good. But being able to come off the bench and contribute in a slightly different way right now, I think it appears to be a little bit more suited to him. And he's learned some things. I think he's a year smarter. He's a year more mature. He's a year better at basketball.
Yeah, and his length is good on defense when he moves his feet appropriately, right? Mm-hmm. So that's good. The Mohawk, in case you're curious as to why that didn't exist – here's the quote of the day out of Jeff Call's article. He said about the Mohawk, I had a change. You get married and then you have to change it up. My wife didn't like the Mohawk look. I changed it up for her.
Well, then he goes on. He's like, I got the buzz cut. I didn't really like that, so I'm growing it back out. My wife's letting me grow it back out. Dude. This is like, did you see the clip of, I don't know if he's playing Fortnite or what game he was playing, but Gordon Hayward's playing a game with some famous gamer.
Oh, yes.
Streaming it on Twitch or something.
Yes, yes.
And he's like, oh, do you want to stick around and play another game with us? And you hear Gordon ask his wife, do I have time to play another game? And she says, no. And then as he's getting off, you hear her in the background say something like, I'm sitting here watching my husband play basketball games. Like, that's how pathetic my life is. And I was like, oh, oh man. Oy, oy. You're Gordon Hayward, dude.
Well, it won't help our Jazz fans. It's
normal.
They're going to make fun of him, our Jazz fan friends who listen to this podcast.
Oh, yeah. They're gonna really own him for that.
They're going to. Yeah, like any of them haven't given in when their wife told them to stop doing something, right? All right, so moving past the good news, back to the bad news, Matt. What's up with the program? And so we have three questions that are fairly similar, so I'm going to read all three of them right now, okay? First one's off of Twitter, and if you want to tweet at us, it's at BYU_ISHOT. It's from CougFan82. He says, magic wand in hand, what do you do to fix the current basketball situation? Recruiting, head coaching change, better assistants, scheme changes, conference change, share your infinite wisdom and hope with us depressed fans, #tweetbag, #climbonin. Wade Hillam on Facebook, and you can join us on Facebook at facebook.com/risingshot. I feel like the basketball program in the last 7 years or so has been trending in the wrong direction. From tournament team to out of the NIT, is it a culture problem, recruiting, developing players? I feel like coaches in any sport see the potential and help kids reach it. See Boise State football for the last 15 years. And then Ben Stoller on Facebook says, after multiple years of mediocrity, does Dave Rose have the passion and enthusiasm required to turn this program around? We're trending in a very bad direction. We're not even a fringe NIT team. So let's go back to Coug Fan's question. Magic wand, what one thing, it doesn't have to be one of the things he lists, Matt, would you change that could turn this program back to where we all think it could be?
Nobody leaves for Europe.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
I mean, that's the big win. But even in that case, right, I think you even have to go a step deeper than that and look at, and this is, you got to hear me out on this one, but in some ways, the Lone Peak 3 is one of the worst things that's ever happened to us.
No, I don't think people are actually going to disagree with you on that.
Right.
It has not worked out.
No, right? It is not. There's not like, oh, we should have seen this coming or whatever. Maybe we should have or what, no, whatever. But, it's really tough. BYU recruits out of a different pool than, generally speaking, than a lot of the schools that we compete against, right? And so to have the phenomenon that was the Lone Peak 3, there was nothing that we could do to stop that train, right? Once that was rolling, this is where it was going. This is where they were coming. They were going to come to BYU, and that's just the way that it was going to be. You know, you have these three very good players in BYU's backyard, and they all decide to go to college together. And then on top of that, with the way missions work out and all of this stuff, I mean, it just, that type of an event at BYU is not a 2-3-4 year event. I mean, it's a decade long event, right? These guys have been on the team since the 90s or something. So, but I feel like that is really at the center of this whole thing. You know, you can talk about assistants. We've talked about this. I think, you know, having an assistant who can really push the players to develop their defensive side of the game is important. And we've been in and out of that over the last 7 years. Head coaching change is not the issue for me. Scheme changes maybe, but I think that's related to this whole thing with recruiting and with the players that have been coming through the system. All great players, but the chemistry and everything to compete at this level just wasn't right.
Yeah, so if you're absolutely right. I think if this season you had Mika, Elijah Bryant, Childs, TJ Haas, and that's your four, this is an NCAA tournament team, right? This is a potential Sweet 16 team.
Yeah, maybe this is a team that if it's not this year's Gonzaga team, right? But in most years, that's a team that could win the conference.
That is a team that like you said, not this year probably, but in other years could have challenged Gonzaga for the conference title. And instead, you have a team that, you know, this is a bad analogy, but it'll make sense in a second. Zion Williams gets hurt. Right. And Duke is struggling since he got hurt. Right. They're struggling because they don't have the depth. Right. They're very top heavy. Right. But they don't have the depth to weather a loss like that. And maybe no one does, because Zion Williams in that case is the best player in the country, give or take. Right. BYU, yeah,
literally jumping out of his shoes.
Yeah. Literally destroying shoes just by being who he is. BYU lost two of their best players to basically an unprecedented event of them just leaving to go play foreign basketball. Now, was that a culture thing? Was it they don't want to play for Rose? I don't know, because nobody has come out and said that, right? And we've talked about that previously on the podcast. So moving on past that, last year, according to sportsreference.com, we were the 62nd best defensive team in the country, okay? This year, we're 262nd in defense. We are one of the worst defensive teams in the country. Now, we've talked about this. It's gotten better over the last several weeks, though that Gonzaga game did not feel like the defense had gotten any better. And San Francisco either, quite frankly, in the second half, didn't feel like the defense. It felt like we were back to where the defense had been before that. I don't understand how we can't be a top 100 defensive team every year. I just don't understand that. To me, with the athletes that we have and good coaching, you should be at minimum top 150 in defense. And typically we are. But this year, so to answer his question, we need to have, you got to have a decent defense every year. Because a lot of that is coaching. On the defensive side of the ball, right? It's scheme. It's getting people to be in the right position physically. And right now, this year, watching this team play defense, quite frankly, is painful to me. I watch us on the defensive side of the floor, and I'm just like, why is that person even there? Right? Why aren't they? I don't even know what they're doing.
Why are you standing there?
Why are you standing there? Like, you know, there are times where you play great defense and a great team makes a shot. Right? And that's just life. Like, you know, and against Gonzaga, that was going to happen. And there were plays where they did play good defense. And it's demoralizing, right? Against a team like Gonzaga. But there were times against San Francisco where I'm like, I don't even know what they're doing on the floor. Right? It seemed like at times Emery was the only perimeter player that had any idea what was going on. And TJ Haws, as much as I love him, his Matador defense on quicker players is a little frustrating sometimes, right? So, like, oh, well, you want to go to the hoop? Well, please be my guest. Don't let me stand in your way.
Well, come on in.
That is frustrating. I'm with you. I don't know about a coaching change. The other things that he mentioned, that Coug, Fan82, we're not going – recruiting, I don't know this is going to be much different except for this international stuff, because I don't know who else we're going to go get, right? The pool's different. Conference change has nothing to do with it. I know a lot of people disagree with this. The Mountain West Conference is not – we didn't leave the ACC, okay, right, to go to the West Coast Conference. We left a Mountain West Conference that was pretty good at the time that has fallen on harder times than when we were there, right? It's not as deep as when we were there. And if you look at today, the West Coast Conference by most – ratings is like the 8th or 9th best conference, and the Mountain West this year is 12th, behind the Ivy League, okay? So conference change, those things kind of go up and down year to year. I would, to you know, unless we're going to a P5 conference, no. In basketball, conference is, I don't want to say it's irrelevant, because it certainly is not, but it's not as relevant as football, right? Gonzaga can be a Final Four contender every year playing in the West Coast Conference, right? Wichita State can be a contender. Butler, before they moved into the Big East. You can be a contender someplace else. And being in the ACC isn't all that it's cracked up to be. Look at Virginia Tech, right? They may be a top 15 team, and they just keep losing, right? Because there's just so many amazing teams. So I don't know. That's all I'm going to say. We can be done with this one. Anything else you want to say?
No.
No, it's depressing.
I was so stoked during the first half of the San Francisco game.
Yeah, we were back in, man. I was back in last week, and then that first half of San Francisco, I'm like, all right, we're in, man. This is they have turned this season around, and then not so much. Not so much. Well, let's talk about football, where we can't get upset because there's no games. So it's just hope.
Yeah. Just all hope. Right.
Best friend of the podcast, Drew J. Now I just did that to mess with
you. I see what you did there.
He had an article about defense and kind of, I don't want to call it defensive preview, but kind of a little bit of a, focus on the defense for spring ball. And obviously the offense is a big question. At running back and different things, but he kind of goes through some of the defensive side. I'm going to start first by I love Jay, I love Jeff Call, and I love the other people covering the team. But if I see another article about defense where they talk about yards per game and don't talk about yards per play or any advanced statistics whatsoever, I'm starting to lose it, right? Yards per game is a terrible way to evaluate a defense, right? I mean, it's so dependent on what style of defense you're playing and also on what style of offense you're playing. Remember when we were go fast, go hard, and people were like freaking out because our defense was giving up 400 yards a game? And you're like, but they're facing 80 plays, right? So it's not actually that bad, comparatively. So that's a little pet peeve of mine. I wish some of these sports writers would enter the 21st century with statistical analysis. All right. Soapbox moment over.
Stop it with your facts and your numbers, Adam.
Yeah, it's and again, yards per play is not the end all be all of statistics, but gosh, let's do something there. But in this article, and actually there was another defensive article where they talked a lot about how the offense was actually a better offense made for a better defense, right? But in this particular article, he talks about Taki Taki and Corbin Kafusi being the massive departures. Michael Shelton also mentioned there. But then I had forgotten about some of these guys that are coming back, man, for missions.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Are you feeling better now than a couple weeks ago when you basically said the defense was going to be terrible?
Well, a couple of these guys coming back from missions, I mean, there is reason to be excited, but it's always hard. I mean, coming back from a mission is hard the first year.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. But
it's hard for all of us.
Chaz Au, who was a safety and assume
he'll
gonna
be ride a heli? Again. Did he bring a helicopter back from his mission? Did he? He's the one that did the helicopter signing thing, right?
I can't remember. Is that
he wrote a helicopter to sign his letter of intent.
All right.
He definitely showed up in a helicopter.
Let's see. Who else did he talk about? Obviously, Devin Kafusi will step in for Corbin, not a newcomer, but Devin didn't play a ton. And we'll see if we can just have another Kafusi step in and play a lot. Isn't that crazy if we end up having three brothers in a row get into the NFL who are defensive linemen?
Keep the Kafusis coming. Are there more of them?
Well, yes. My guess is there probably are more. And then they talk about the defensive line, obviously, is kind of set, right, in that you've got a lot of guys outside of Corbin who came back, including Peely and Tonga, who I'm high. We both love both of those guys quite a bit. And then the defensive backs could be solid, and they added more. JC transfers Eric Ellison and Dimitri Gallo primarily. And Ed Lamb's comments about Gallo being the best bump and run cover corner he's ever seen at that level in high school. That's pretty high praise, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's pretty high praise. You listen to what Guilford talking about Ellison, I mean, this guy was playing both ways at the JC level, and he's ready to go. He's ready to go right now.
Not just playing both ways. He played running back, wide receiver, defensive back, and returned kicks.
I feel like I don't know where he's going to end up for BYU on the field. I mean, look, I mean, we need somebody to do all of those things.
Well, I think they're seeing this in the NFL with a couple of different players. And I think this has happened a few times in the pros, I mean, in college in the past. If you've got a guy that can do all those things, let him do all those things, which probably means he's not an every down guy on defense, right? But he's probably a guy that can play nickel or dime packages when you need him to. And then you give him a chance to, you know, get a couple touches on offense and he returns kicks, right? I mean, isn't that how you maximize a guy like that instead of him being a starting corner? Especially if you got this Gallo guy, if he's good at bump and run coverage. I mean, it's very clear to me that Guilford and Tuiaki want to play tough man-to-man when they think their guys aren't going to get killed by it, right? They're not going to put them in a bad position. But
they're not afraid to have their guys mix it up at the line of scrimmage, which is a real evolution in defensive philosophy for us.
Yes, yes, it most certainly is. It is a big evolution. I love.
But you've got to have the athletes. You've got to have the players to do it. But
you can't do bump and run unless you can do bump and run, right? I mean, not bump and run. Why can't I think of the name right now?
Now you got me confused.
So you can't do it, right? You can't do it without them there.
I can't disagree with what you said. You can't do it if you can't do it.
That's right. If you can't do it, you can't do it.
I can't disagree with that.
So other people that were mentioned in this article that are coming back, Ammon Hanneman from Emission.
Yep.
Solofa Funa from Emission. Linebacker, a bunch of linebackers, actually. Keenan Peely, Preston Lewis, Alex Miskella. I mean, there's a bunch of people. So I think, like you said, are they going to be able to step in straight off their missions and contribute? Some of them probably yes. Some of them probably no, right? They're going to need a year to redshirt and to do that. But the other one is, where was it? Here in this article is that we got a linebacker from last year, Zane Anderson, who, you know, played
Zane
in
Anderson
four games.
Coming off of surgery.
Yeah, and he was looking pretty good. Because if you remember, I did not think that was a good idea, and he looked good in those first four games. And I think that helps that linebacker core that obviously has lost some really good players.
So for me, Zane Anderson is the guy on defense that's kind of the under the radar breakout guy.
Okay, so that was a question that we've got, Matt. So you've already
answered
it.
I always jump ahead. Get excited.
Alex Flack,
I jumped the gun on your question.
Do you have any prediction for a couple of under the radar breakout players for the upcoming football season? And then Daniel Smith has a similar one on Facebook. Tips for getting over a cold? Rest? Chicken soup? I don't know. Regarding football,
emergency.
Who will be the biggest story of the 2019 football season? We'll get to that here in a second. They both said hashtag tweet back, hashtag climb on in. So it sounds like one of your under the radar players is Zane Anderson. Anybody else?
I think anybody else would be a real stretch for me, right? But this is a guy that's got game experience, valuable game experience that I think will be ready to go at the beginning of the season. There's a couple of these guys that we've been discussing that are back for missions that I think by the end of the year will be ready to go, but are likely not going to be making big impacts until middle of October, towards the end of October. So I'm going to stick with Zane Anderson in terms of under the radar breakout players.
On the defensive side of the ball, if we're talking about the new cucumbers? What am I even saying?
It's a cucumber.
Maybe it's Dimitri Gallo. I think as far as, you know, just overall, I think it's one of those, it's Kafensis or Bohaj, which we talked about last week or the week before. I think one of those guys is an under the radar. Nobody's talking about Bohaj anymore, right? So if he does anything, if he contributes at anything next year, it will be a surprise, right? Because we thought he was going to have some involvement in the offense last year, and he had basically none. And Kafensis had some last year, but not a lot. As far as who will be the biggest story of 2019, on offense, it's got to be Wilson, right? I mean, that's your biggest story.
I don't even know what else to say.
Yeah,
I think.
Unless one Wilson. Of these running backs emerges as like a power force, you know, I think it's got to be him. On defense, I don't know who it is because I don't know outside of Tonga if we have any superstars on defense. But I don't feel worried about the defense. I think they might take a step back from last year. I don't know if they'll be as good as they were last year. But I think that's okay, right? Not every year you're going to have the same level of play. But I don't feel super nervous about any position. I think, like you've said previously, linebacker is a concern. But I don't sit there and go, our linebacker corps is going to be terrible either, right? I just think they're inexperienced and they may not have a big playmaker in that group, right?
But it's a big group, so there's some depth. There's some opportunity to figure something out there. I'm not freaking out, but I'm also not licking my chops
around any of these guys too, right? Like,
yep.
You know, where will all these guys play? I don't know. And right now,
if we've learned anything the past couple of years, one of these guys is going to end up on the offense.
Well, I think there's a very good chance that one of these linebackers ends up playing running back. Right? It becomes clear that they're not going to be in the two deep as a linebacker, right? And they say in spring ball or at the beginning of fall, say, you know what, dude, you're not going to be in the two deep. Do you want a shot at, especially if they're an upperclassman, right? Like Hadley was, right? Do you want a shot at running back? And if I'm them and I played running back in high school and I like it and I'm not going to play on defense, the answer is yes, right? Oh yeah, I'll do it. So we'll see how that goes. Sweeney had another question for us, Matt.
And we all know we can't skip Sweeney's questions.
He said yes. We asked if we needed any tweetbag questions. Are you ever going to answer my question? No. All right, moving on. Just kidding, Justin. He a couple weeks ago tweeted at us in 10 years, which is most likely to be true, Matt. Most likely. Okay. BYU is part of a new upper-tier college football league, P5 or its derivative. That's choice one. Choice two, BYU is still indy and trying to play catch-up. I don't know what that last part means, so I'm going to scratch it, Justin. BYU is still indy. Okay? It's number two. Number three, BYU gets demoted to the G5. I don't think that's a demotion from independence except for financially. From a football standpoint, it's somewhat similar. Right? You don't have as good of a schedule, but you get some benefits. So, you know, unless we're talking financially, then it's definitely a demotion. And then fourth, BYU is part of the new FCS because it missed out on option one. And then he says, and then I guess the last one actually is BYU ends up with no football anymore. Okay, I'm going to rule the BYU no football thing. People have been talking that for 40 years. I rule that there's 0% chance that happens in the next 10 years. Matt, do you agree?
Yeah.
You can just eliminate that
one. I agree.
Okay. All right. So the options are P5, Indy, G5, some type of basically FCS kind of thing because they end up, you know, basically kicking a bunch of schools out of the old D1, right? Or 1A or whatever you want to call it. FBS. So Matt, which one of those is most likely in your opinion 10 years from today, so in 2028?
So when I look at this, I immediately eliminate bookends, right? We eliminated one bookend, which is no football at BYU. Okay, we can get rid of that. But the other bookend that I think you immediately eliminate is being part of an upper tier college football league. So what's left for me? And I don't know if you were going to go to the least likely true question and I jumped ahead on you, but
no.
So I'm going to but I'm going to get rid of that too because we're not going to P5. And so I think the most likely option here is that, and I don't know that I want to call it a demotion either, but in 10 years, we're going to be part of some reheat of the Mountain West Conference or the AAC or some conference with that tier of team in it. And that's where we're going to be. That's who, and guys, that's who we are. That's who we've been. And I feel like that's the most likely scenario.
Okay, so I agree with you that that's the most likely. What's next? We're still independent 10 years from now?
I don't think that's next.
I think it's
no. P5. I think what's next is. Oh, I would have gone the other direction. I think what's next is a scenario where college football is like massively overhauled, and you basically take this upper tier P5 group of people, they run off and become Division I, and then everybody else becomes a new 1A FCS type thing. So I think that's the second most likely option, is that college football massively reorganizes and we end up in the B squad.
See, I think you're wrong if they massively reorganize. I think if they massively reorganize, BYU gets in. Because if they just start tearing down some of those lines and say the Big Ten and the SEC are the only survivors that are recognizable today, okay? Which, based on revenue and strength of programs, in 10 years, that may be what happens, right? The ACC is not to the same level as the Big Ten and SEC, right? The Big 12 has all sorts of issues, and the Pac-12 does too, financially. They are a step behind everybody, right?
Including the Alliance of American Football.
Potentially. Your Stallions.
I'd have to look again at the TV deals, but yikes.
Yeah, no, there have been some recent articles about that. The Pac-12 is way behind, right? Because the Pac-12 network isn't on enough cable packages, right? Shocker. So anyway, I think being part of that is the more likely of those two scenarios. But here's the thing. I think us being in some other conference 10 years from now, not a P5, is the most likely by a long stretch. Because I think they could reorganize, massively reorganize, but not kick people out. I think they could massively reorganize and still let the G5 groups exist and play in whatever FBS or whatever it's called in the future. And I think once that happens, after that new round of TV deals here in a few years, that's when BYU will have to get off the independence fence and go one way or the other. And independence will still have been the right call because you stayed a complete and available free agent, got to play all these cool schedules. And if it works out and you get in the P5 or whatever it becomes, great. And if it doesn't, you're no worse off than you were before you were independent, right? It's going to be the same.
Right.
So that's why when some people go, we got to go now, it's like, why would you go now to one of the G5 conferences? It would be absolutely stupid to go now.
No, you staying, go. We go when we're forced to go.
Yeah, staying, I would have. None of us would have critiqued it at the time because I don't think many of us really thought independence. We weren't considering it that hard. So if you'd stayed, people would have been fine. But now that you're out, you just wait and see how the landscape falls. I think there's almost zero chance it's BYU ends up in this some type of FCS-like thing. BYU is too big of a program and has had too much success for the NCAA to do that. Somebody at the NCAA will be smart when they put those things back together. They won't do it.
Yeah.
All right, last thing, Matt. We talked about this already, so we're not going to answer Randy's complete question, but we're going to answer part of his question. He asks, Randy Whittle on Facebook says, what are your top three anticipated movies for 2019? Also, did the new Aladdin trailer make you feel excited or ill? Top three movies. I think we talked about this a few weeks ago. It's Avengers. It's Episode 9 for me. And I've got a bunch of other movies that I'm super excited about. But I don't know. It's probably, I don't know, another Marvel movie, Captain Marvel. There's a bunch of ones I'm excited about.
I've got the same top two, but Frozen 2 looks pretty exciting.
Stop it.
The New Mutants though. That one's got my attention.
New Mutants looks good.
The first time I saw the Aladdin trailer, I did get excited. The second time I was like, I don't know about
this. They have a new one with Will Smith being all blue. Have you seen it?
No. Is that the one that I need to go see? Is that the one that's going to make or break this talking about?
This looks like a spoof movie to me. Every time I've seen the first trailer and this next one, I feel like it's somebody, a fan-made trailer of what a live-action Aladdin would look like. And like they've taken some footage of Will Smith and thrown a blue face on him. I mean, the effects look terrible. I have zero anticipation for this movie now. And Aladdin is maybe my favorite Disney movie of all time. So I kind of feel like the live actions, and I felt this way about the Beauty and the Beast one. If you're not going to make it different, I don't know why you're making it, right? Like, I'm not against remakes. I don't think anything sacred like that. You can't remake it. I just think if you're going to do a remake, do something different, right? Don't just make the cartoon version with real people with the same songs, you know, layout and exact story, right?
Well, for me, I think this is a good example of one of the things that bothers me about movies right now. And maybe this is just like an old man get off my lawn thing. Maybe this has always been true and I haven't noticed it. But if you look through movies coming out this year, right, you've got the live action Aladdin, live action Lion King, which are both reheats of previous movies. You've got
The Lion King is not live action.
Whatever it is.
They teach animals to talk. It's animated animals.
Those animals talk. And but you got a lot of like reheats, like Men in Black International. You've got sequels, remakes, flipped versions of movies that came out 20 years ago. It's just like, I don't know. It's like, where are the new ideas?
I don't have any problem with not.
I need new ideas.
Okay, because we now make so many more movies than they did 50 years ago that you know, I don't mind that. I mind if the movies stink, right? Like, nobody is disappointed if they make a new Men in Black movie and it's awesome, right? Are you going to be disappointed if you see it and it's amazing? No. You're going to say, well, that was a good idea. And then if you see it and it's terrible, you're going to be like, see, they shouldn't have remade that. In the end, you just have to make good movies. The problem with a straight-up remake is, why are you going to watch a movie that's exactly the same, right? I just went to As You Like It, a Shakespeare play at a theater in Minneapolis, okay? They have redone Shakespeare plays a billion times, right? So you have to do something a little different. Costumes, characters, something a little different. Or you do it straight up, right? You can with a play, right? Because it's live entertainment. But I kind of feel like that with movies. You can remake them, but you got to do something with it, right? You can't just, well, it's not Robin Williams, it's Will Smith. You know, and it's
doing
like,
his best impression of Robin Williams.
Oh, I hope not. I hope he's just.
I hope not. He's gonna have to own this and make it his own. I think Will Smith has got the ability to do that because you can't replace what Robin Williams did with the genie.
No. It's like now everybody. Well, we'll see with Joaquin Phoenix how he does with the Joker. But it's like now everybody. You know, you don't want to do a bad imitation of Heath Ledger, right? Right. You got to do something different. So I just sit there and I think, I don't care that they're doing a lot of remakes. I guess you're right. They should do some more original ideas, right? But original ideas can be terrible too, right? Original doesn't mean it's going to necessarily be better. And some of the best movies, I mean, look at last year. Black Panther gets nominated for the best picture. And it was not a sequel, but the character had already appeared in a movie. It was, you know, part of one of these cinematic universes, but it was just a good movie, right? You know, Doctor Strange didn't get nominated for Best Picture because it was just an okay movie, right? So they just need to make good movies. And if they made a good one, like, did you like the live-action Cinderella? Did you see that one?
Didn't see it.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Did you like the live-action Maleficent?
Yes.
See, but they did something different, right?
Right, it's that was a different take. That wasn't a remake of another movie.
Yes, it was not a remake of another movie. It was very different than the animated Sleeping Beauty. And that's what I want to see them do. The Cinderella was basically the same storyline, but they cut out all the music and updated it, right, a little bit.
Yeah, well, they took it from a different angle.
Yeah, which is what they should do with this Aladdin one. The trailers look terrible. And hopefully it's totally wrong.
Well, but I think they have to balance a line with the trailers, right? They're trying to capture. They want you and people like you who really like the animated movie. They want you to latch onto this to feel some kind of nostalgia so that you will go buy a ticket. And then they'll worry about entertaining you once you get in the theater. But they need you to go buy a ticket.
Yeah, Yeah, they want me to go buy a ticket, but right now I don't want to go buy a ticket.
Well,
So
then they didn't get you.
They didn't. It did not work. It did not work. We haven't heard Aladdin even speak in a trailer. You know, it's weird. It's weird. So anyway, all right. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. That was kind of a negative ending. Do you have something positive to say?
It was a little bit of a negative
I'm
Nelly there.
I'm super stoked for Captain Marvel and Shazam.
And Avengers.
And Avengers. Oh, yes. And Avengers.
It's going to be awesome.
And, yeah, I'm excited for all of those movies. And I think there's going to be some really good movies this summer. And last year, you and I talked about this at the end of the summer. There were a lot of good movies last year, right?
Yep.
There were a lot of good movies, and I think there's going to be a bunch of good, fun movies. And yes, there will be some terrible ones. And I won't see this movie because it's rated R, but I'm also excited for The Kid, the new Billy the Kid movie.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you've seen trailers for that, but it looks pretty amazing.
Not that you're advocating that.
But... No, I wouldn't tell anyone to go see it. They absolutely shouldn't go see it. But if they did, it might end up being something worth seeing.
Okay, one movie. I was going to go back to movies I don't want to see.
You want
to
see
Let's not go back down that road. Actually, I kind of want to see Dumbo. I think Dumbo is going to be an example of where they've taken a spin on it.
I don't even like the animated Dumbo movie. And I am interested in the live action one because of who's in it and because it looks like they're going to play it
different. And it's Tim Burton, right? I mean, it's going to be weird. It's going to be a little bit different. Yeah, it's not going to be a reheated version of the cartoon. It just won't be. And maybe Aladdin won't be after you see it.
It will be.
You know, but Jungle Book was.
Jungle Book was okay.
Yeah, but it was a reheat.
It was definitely a reheat.
And the Lion King trailer screams, like, we just took some of the music out of this and made the animals look
real. Yeah, we made the animals look real, and it's going to
be... But
it's James Earl Jones, it's the voice of Mufasa.
And we're gonna show you the scene where Rafiki breaks the thing open, he smears the red stuff on Simba's head and holds him up. It looks exactly like the cartoon.
We're going to use the exact same voice cast. It's like, oh, gosh, guys. Come on.
Sonic the Hedgehog does not need a movie.
Sonic the Hedgehog absolutely does need a movie. In 1999, he needed a movie. I'm not sure he needs one now.
We are 20 years too late here, which is funny because Sonic is actually really fast, but he showed up too slow. He showed up too slow on the silver screen.
Well, what do you think about the Pikachu Detective Pikachu movie?
That actually looks entertaining. I'm not going to lie to you. I giggle every time I've seen the preview.
Same here. It could be one of those, that comes out and surprises you for sure. All right. Well, good. We finished on a little bit more positive. That's good. Well, everybody, thank you for downloading and listening. If you want to subscribe to the show, you can do so on iTunes. We will also soon be on Spotify. So it's in the works, but it is not finished. I will let you guys know when the show is live on Spotify. But otherwise, we're everywhere, almost everywhere you'd want to get to subscribe to the podcast. You can email us at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com and tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!